I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Michael LaFlemme with us, a researcher, adjunct professor of history and philosophy, columnist for the New Dawn magazine, a scuba diver and guitarist as well, and the author of the recently published Visions of Atlantis, Reclaiming Our Lost Ancient Legacy. Now, he grew up in South Florida, attended the Harriet L. Wilkes Honors College and Florida State University, where he studied Western intellectual history, U.S. foreign policy. Michael is also a book reviewer for Publishers Weekly and was a one-time research assistant for investigative journalist Whitney Webb while she was writing her best-selling two-part series, One Nation Under Blackmail. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, George. So nice to be on.
It's good to have you. How did you get interested in Atlantis, Michael?
You know, maybe it's just because, like, a lot of people who grew up in South Florida, you know, I grew up on Atlantic Boulevard near the Atlantic Ocean. My grandfather had always been interested in kind of ancient mysteries, the pyramids. I always kind of, since I was a kid, felt like there was a part of the human story that was not complete. And later, when I became a professor, a traditional, you know, mainstream college professor, adjunct professor in Chicago for about 12 years. And I started to look more seriously into ancient history when I would teach a survey course, say, on Egypt or ancient Greece, that there really was something to these seminal accounts that, for the most part, were transmitted from two of Plato's iconic dialogues, the Timaeus and Critias, and a few others anecdotally before that. And, you know, it was just something that I kind of put on the back burner until one day I started to take this subject very seriously, and it kind of led me down a 7-year rabbit hole that was initially just a series of notes and kind of ideas that I just jotted down. And at the end of 7 years, I realized, you know, you actually have a book if you sit down and organize this. And, you know, through the urging of my friends and colleagues, they said, you know, you should tell this story. And so I did it.
Here we are.
And I published it around Christmas last year. So here I am.
Good for you. Why can't we, with this incredible technology we possess, find a sunken continent? Why can't we? You would think it would be easy.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question. And I always point people to a map that I actually put on the top of my new website, which you can check out at michaellaflemme.com. And it's a map of, I believe it's from the 50s, after they had finished surveying the Atlantic Ocean. And to answer your question, just simply, if you look in the middle Atlantic, you see actually the outline of an enormous continent that we call the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which is a giant sunken, what we call, mountain range that has seamounts that pop out, Bermuda, the Azores. So my first response always is, you know, let's just look at what we can look at, which is the ocean floors. And indeed, there is a large continental landmass there. Of course, the problem most people have is imagining, well, what kind of catastrophe could have befallen the Earth to create that kind of flooding and those kinds of Earth changes to, you know, completely submerge that part of the world. And I understand that. You know, that's absolutely understandable. And at the same time, as I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more, you know, this whole idea, the language of this question, you know, the lost continent, the lost island, that research really kind of took me on its own route, which showed that there were more than likely three, at least that I can see, destructions of this former continent that reduced it to the smaller island and surrounding archipelago that Plato, for example, was probably talking about when he described an island roughly, you know, three quarters of the size of, say, modern Spain off the coast of the Mediterranean. So, yeah, I always tell people, just look at the map, you know, look at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, which, again, where did that name come from?
Other than Plato, Edgar Cayce, the American prophet, how many others have talked about Atlantis in the past?
You know, more than you would think. And I know that's a very common critique, is that it all began with Plato and that it was kind of a morality play to make Athens look good and things like this. But I always point to the fact that Plato got his story, according to him, from his distant relative Solon, who would have been around, you know, 560 BC. He got the story from the ancient Egyptians. And that's really critical, because one of the first sources that I can find that mentions a word similar to Atlantis and a similar civilization would be an actual Egyptian document, the Turin King List, from the 13th century BC. So you're talking 900 years before Plato. The Egyptians were talking about this time, roughly 10,000 BC in our timeline, which is right around the same time Plato says the continent was destroyed. He says 9,600, but around that time, when the Egyptians said there were 10 basically god kings, however you want to interpret that, but very powerful people that lived a long time, who ruled in a foreign land, there were 10 of them, that was destroyed, and that was a kind of golden age that they called Zeptepi. And then only thousands of years after that did the dynastic period that we call ancient Egypt with the pharaohs and things like this begin. So that's one. And another one, just briefly, is the Mahabharata from India, which could be as old as 1,000 years BC, 800 BC, but certainly about 500 years at least before Plato. And they mention a place called Atala, and they say this was an island to the west that was destroyed after a 10-year war and sank into the ocean. And so to me, these are very compelling pre-Platonic sources that lend a lot of credibility to these later accounts that people think are the first accounts of this continent.
Let's look at the possibilities, Michael, of what could have sunk the island. I mean, I'm pretty well convinced, as you are, that something went down there and something was there. But let's talk about possibilities. Let me throw out some and get your thoughts. One, an asteroid strike that may have hit the continent or really close by. What do you think of that?
Yes, in fact, that's probably the most likely cause of the final destruction around, let's say, 10,500 to 10,000 BC. And I say most likely because, you know, as many people know, through the work of Graham Hancock and other people who brought to attention the fact that researchers in around 15 years ago discovered fairly compelling evidence of, you know, nano diamond fragments all over the globe that suggest an enormous catastrophe, celestial body hitting the Earth, likely did end the final ice age and begin the Holocene period that we live in, which is, you know, radically different than the previous, let's say, roughly speaking, you know, for our purposes, 100,000 years, which themselves had ups and downs. But yeah, I think that's actually quite compelling. And, you know, a lot of people suggest that comet or asteroid could have actually hit on the North Atlantic ice sheet, which is why there's no impact crater. Or some people suggest even off the Carolina coast. So, yeah, I think that's actually quite compelling. And, indeed, in Plato's account, the Egyptian priest talks about that. He says, you Greeks call it the myth of Phaethon, but that myth signifies an actual heavenly body falling to earth and burning up everything on it. So I think, there you go, you have two sources right there for at least
interesting
the final destruction of Atlantis, absolutely.
What about a massive earthquake?
Well, you know, Edgar Cayce said that the first destruction, which he places at 50,722 B.C., which is much more remote time, that fractured the continent into five islands, was actually the result of what you just said, but it was something on a scale that we can't really understand, and it was human cause. And so in Cayce's timeline, it was the misapplication of a tremendously powerful, what he basically describes in the 1930s when he gave this reading, which is incredible, a sort of directed energy weapon that he claims was beamed from or to and bounced off the stratosphere into volcanic flows on different parts of the earth, not for warfare, but to actually destroy the food supply, he claims, of the megafauna that were overrunning the earth, because this is the Ice Age with saber-toothed tigers and giant sloths. And as strange as that sounds, in my research, indeed I did find an unexplained megafaunal extinction from the Journal of Quaternary Studies, peer-reviewed mainstream journal, at 50,000 B.C.
Do you think this may have come from within this planet or from an outside ET source?
Well, that's a great question. Cayce specifically says it was directed by human beings who had actually met in a council in that year, 50,722, on Atlantis, which was a continent at that time. And they decided that this was the only way, because the animals were overrunning parts of the Earth, to mitigate this risk. And he said that at the same time, actually, there was a pole shift, magnetic pole shift, that was already in progress, and that this weapon exacerbated the effects of that pole shift and basically dramatically altered the contours of the Earth and fractured even certain tectonic plates and basically broke this thing up. So, to answer your question, it's many things, because I believe there were at least three destructions of this civilization that spanned about 40 to 50,000 years, as incredible as that sounds.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can you imagine the technology they may have possessed even then?
You know, that's why I was so focused on, as the book progresses, you know, I take readers through the kind of historically important information from cultural history, oral traditions, Plato, what the Romans thought about this. But then to really grasp these questions, as you and many other people want to know, and myself was very curious about if this was indeed a reality, you have to go to these clairvoyant or channeled sources or remote viewing sources. And yeah, to answer your question, it's absolutely astounding, not just the level of detail that some of these channelers gave of this technology, but like you said, imagining, you know, what it would be like to have a weapon that's essentially a ground-based Death Star or, you know, stratospheric weapons that, you know, we may possess today but have not deployed to our knowledge. You know, that's very interesting.
Did they have flying machines then too? What do you think?
I do believe so. And I don't just think that's limited to Atlantis. I think it was something that many cultures talk about, you know, in many, you know, there are obvious forgeries that people have, understandably, and I address that as well, forgeries of, you know, Indian schematics that somebody says, oh, I found a schematic for a Vimana in a Tibetan temple. It turns out to be fake. But there are very real accounts from India that are not forgeries that absolutely describe flying machines. And from my research into, say, the channelings from A Dweller on Two Planets, which I find very compelling because that book was channeled in 1886, before anybody had ever flown anything but a balloon. And he's describing cigar-shaped, basically modern, you know, cigar UFO type devices that can fly in the air, fly in the high stratosphere, travel underwater, and that were powered by this very arcane crystal entrainment technology. So I absolutely think so. Yeah, I think it's absolutely possible.
We're with Michael LaFlemme. His book is called Visions of Atlantis. His website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Michael, why do we still have this love affair with Atlantis?
Yes, that is the question. Well, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with what, for example, Edgar Cayce said to a lot of his clients who, just like him, in the 1930s, you must imagine this is a very strange topic that to devout Christians in his community was quite taboo, reincarnation, Atlantis. He even mentioned Jesus, the soul that became Jesus, actually being one of the founders of Atlantis. And so his clients asked him, like, why do you say we all have come back at this time? And in Cayce's understanding of reincarnation and kind of the cycle of life, you know, people come back in soul groups, which I think is a very interesting idea. And if you multiply those soul groups enough, you have whole cultures coming back. And this is something that not just Cayce mentioned, it's something that many channelers have mentioned, that perhaps entire elements of, say, a certain timeline of Atlantis have decided to come back as human beings in our timeline, you know, and play out the same drama, see if they can get it right or learn something new. And I also think, on a kind of negative answer to that question, you know, there's the love affair, and there's, of course, you know, the more you love something, the more you probably are eventually going to, you know, hate it if it turns on you. And I think, as we've seen from the tremendous criticism people like Graham Hancock have gotten just from proposing that there could be an ancient civilization that predates, say,
right,
you know,
with technology.
BC. Right. I think that mainstream science, he's so challenged, and not just mainstream science, the entire mainstream, you know, disciplines, history, anthropology, they're so challenged by, you know, an independent researcher or somebody who's claiming that, hey, there's actually corroborating evidence between clairvoyant or remote viewed images from the past and archaeological discoveries. It's very difficult to explain if you think this is fake. And, you know, they don't want to admit that, hey, maybe Khufu didn't build the Great Pyramid. Perhaps it was, as many people have suggested, myself included, built by people from a much more advanced, much older civilization. And the dynastic Egyptians inherited it, you know, because people have built careers on that. And I know for a fact, as a historian, the profession does not generally like to change course. It's very slow.
Is it conceivable that some of the occupants of Atlantis, once it was sinking, escaped and went to other regions of the planet?
Yes, I think it's absolutely the case. And because of the central location, it explains a lot of things that otherwise don't really make sense. Cultural connections between, say, where I live right now in Mexico, you know. Think about the Aztecs, for example. The Aztecs have a god called Atlanteotl. The Greeks have a god, Titan, called Atlas. Both of them are portrayed holding up the world on its shoulders.
Right.
Now, how could that be if they're not supposed to have had communication? You have the same etymology, you have the same imagery. And what's fascinating about that exact term, that god, is that in one of my main sources, A Dweller on Two Planets from 1886, a 17-year-old kid with no education living in the Wild West in Eureka, California, channels a book of a past life in Atlantis. And one of the things he said was he's looking back on the final destruction of it. And he says, you know, alas, I'm paraphrasing, something like, alas, Atlan, never to be seen again, which beheld the world at its height in science, arts, and civilization. And it really, it struck me because it's like, we look at Atlas, or we look at Atlanteotl, and we think, these silly people, they thought they were holding up the world, and, you know, like Native Americans thought the earth was on the back of a turtle. But think about a modern person who perhaps would portray the same thing, let's say, to represent the United States, you know, a superpower. And I think when you look between the lines like that, you see that these aren't just mere symbolic, archaic representations of gods and, you know, kind of from a primitive or superstitious people. These are actually more modern people than us in many ways.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.